Hello, everybody, and welcome to the GMS Magazine channel. I am Paco Garcia, your host. And if you are listening to the podcast instead of watching the video in our YouTube channel, well, in either case, today I have an absolutely fantastic treat for you. This is the RPG Interview Room, the show in which I am lucky enough to get together with some of the coolest people in the world of role-playing games to interview them and talk about their projects, their past, their present, their future, and basically their influence in the role-playing game community. Today, in this episode, I am not kidding, you are going to see me geek out. For the first time, well, since I interviewed Margaret Wise so many years ago, I am actually geeking out because my guest is one of the people that I admire the most, respect the most, and have, she's just amazing. Absolutely amazing. And she happens to run or co-run one of my most favoritest companies ever. I'm talking about Nicole Lindruss from Green Ronin Publishing. And I'm not kidding, somebody that I've spent weeks and weeks and weeks bringing myself to say, you know, would you like to come to the podcast and the YouTube channel? Because I just thought, why would she want to talk to me? And she's game. So I'm very, seriously, I'm not pretending. I am this happy. And this is 48 hours after I recorded the interview. So anyway, with a company that does things the way they want to do things, as in the way they consider things to be the right thing to do. They're inclusive, they're diverse, they take risks, they do change things, and they set the pavement for many other companies and projects to walk in similar ways. They're very much pioneers. So I was gagging to ask her so many questions, both in and off camera, that, you know, here it is. Anyway, I'm going to stop bubbling because this is going to be an absolutely fantastic interview, I promise you. If you haven't subscribed to our channel yet, please do so and help us leaving a comment and let us know what you think. Because me and my husband Martin, because truly it means an awful lot. And if you're listening to the podcast, please do leave us a review in iTunes because that helps us a ton. So anyway, I shall say no more. Ladies, gentlemen, here it is, Nicole Lindruss. Nicole, welcome to the show. I'm not joking, you have no idea how long I have been thinking about having you and asking you to be in the show, and how long I've been, why would she want to talk to me? I mean, she's one of the most powerful women in the industry. Why would you want to talk to me? I have admired you from a distance for so long. I'm not kidding.
Oh my goodness. I am just a person.
And you're a wonderful person. So, no, you are. Sorry, I'm geeking out. I'm geeking out. I can't believe it. But I'm talking to Nicole Lindruss. Well, I'm geeking out. Anyway, right. So, but I haven't, other than Facebook, we haven't really interacted. So, I haven't interviewed you before. So, I need to be very professional and put you through the same grueling experience that I put everybody and make sure that you can answer questions. So,
very good.
I'm going to ask you five questions right away. Baptism of fire. So, question number one, tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Okay, fine. I love that answer. Question number two, the beach or the mountain? I like that. See, I went for the corporate mark.
Oh, look at you.
Yes. So, beach or mountain?
Oh, mountain.
Okay, that's fine as well. Cars or motorbikes?
Cars.
Okay, that's safe.
Mustangs.
Ooh, classic. Mustangs. That's good. Okay, this is slightly harder. Fantasy or science fiction?
Fantasy.
Okay, good.
And can I elaborate? I just started reading I just started reading Hugo Award winners in an effort to be better read in science fiction, because I'm really not. I've picked up a little bit here and there. I mean, the, you know, Star Wars generation, of course, but especially like intellectual hard sci-fi. I'm just not well versed, so that's my personal quarantine project, actually.
Well, that sounds like a very interesting project and a very worthy one indeed. Okay, last question. This is the hardest. Bye.
Oh no.
Okay, this is very hard indeed. Yeah. Zombies or vampires?
Vampires.
All the cool people say vampires.
Well, I do have a history with them. Okay. I was part of the Vampire the Masquerade first edition team. So
I bet that was special.
It was. I was very young. We were all very young. I turned 21 wow. the last year that I was working there. I had already been working with those people for 3 or 4 years. Yeah, it was crazy.
Wow. So. Yeah, that's the game that revolutionized role-playing games like no game has done since, I don't think. Because we have Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson with D&D. Then Call of Cthulhu came to show that something else could be done on Traveller. Mm-hmm. And then Vampire the Masquerade. I don't think ever since there's been a more influential game.
I had no idea it would still be around. You know, 30 Probably. Years. I've had a 30-year-long career and it's still around. It's amazing to me.
Yeah, I mean, that is really, really incredible. I think in some ways it even saved role-playing games from Magic the Gathering, because the people who played Vampire the Masquerade, they are one of the most passionate and devoted crowd in role-playing games.
It changed the gender balance in gaming as yes. well. I absolutely saw women entering. All of these like gorgeous, powerful goth women started showing up at conventions, and it was like I could actually trace it to their interest in vampire and nothing else. Yeah, it was neat. It was neat.
Absolutely. But you are now, I mean, I know Paramus is there, but you're the boss. Ingrid Ronin.
Right. I mean, he gets to be called president, but power behind the throne and all that.
Bless him. Okay, tell me a little bit about, you know, Green Ronin. You run one of the most spoken, looked up to companies in the industry. It's one of the companies that has decided to have a code of ethics that has proven many times controversial in the past for pretty much all the time the wrong reasons. Why did you decide, you know, this is the kind of company we want to be?
Well, I think that personally, Hal and Chris and I as partners were just living our values, right? Mm-hmm. And we've all definitely done time in corporate environments where you are just a cog in the machine, regardless of what you might personally believe. And I mean, if you're going to have your own company, why not structure it so that it supports the way you want to live? So we definitely wanted to be, open and liberal and accepting.
Yes, but the thing is, the thing about you, which is, to be honest, the one thing that I truly admire, is that you are unashamedly vocal about it, even though you've had an awful lot of trolling and abuse in the past. And yet, there you are, still showing your face in camera, still going to conventions, still publishing books, still doing what you feel is the right thing to do. Is it worth it for you? That amount of grief you get from time to time in order to do what you do?
You know, just like a lot of other gamers and nerds, I am a genuine nerd, and I was bullied as a kid a lot for my nerdiness and my beliefs. I don't know. I feel like I would be getting that backlash from those cretins anyway. If not for speaking out about, transgender rights or equality in some fashion that they object to, it would be over wearing a mask during a pandemic. You know, like, it's anything now. So I might as well just own it. And frankly, honestly, I am just a fighty person. I've always been. I was that kid who, in middle school, I took advantage of the fact that I was a tall girl, and I stood up to bullies, and I have an infamous story about going to a eighth grade dance in a fluffy purple dress and walking back to my house in my neighborhood with two boys from my street, and the local bully decided that he was going to try to intimidate them and threaten them to a fight. I was not having it. So I was like, please hold my corsage. Please hold my cake, which I had taken in a napkin. It was going to take home with me. Oh. And I was like, you want to fight? You got to fight. And he was using, gendered derogatory language towards the boys. And I was like, is that what you're looking for? Because you can.
He's wrong here.
Right here. You got it. And this young man from a block away shook his fist and called out, you're lucky I was raised right because I don't hit girls. And I was like, well, that's your problem, not mine.
I think he was lucky.
He ran away.
He was lucky.
So, honestly, I am deeply morally offended by abuse of power and bigotry, and so I think I can't help myself. It's not as strategic as you're making it sound. If I were clever, I might not.
No, but at some point you have done in the company some things that some people have thought it was strategic, to put it that way. I mean, you decided to have an anthology written by women, and you make calls for just women, which weaklings take that really badly.
They really did. Yes, they did. I've never watched them, but I heard through the grapevine from people who do watch that there were YouTube videos made ranting against me with all sorts of crazy suppositions that they'd pieced together from random things I had said here and there and built a story around it. Completely fabricated motivations and weird.
I know. It is bizarre because, why do you think people care so much? I mean, if I see a company doing something that I don't agree, as long as it's not something bad, I just think, so what? If I'm interested, I'm going to buy the book. And if I'm not interested, then so be it. It's like having a company doing a game on a franchise that I'm not interested in.
Great.
Why do you think people care so much?
I have found that from the very beginning of my career. I was really lucky when I first got started because my first game was Ars Magica. Mm-hmm. In the second edition of that game, they put forward all of these concepts like shared story guides. So you didn't have just one game master telling the master story through the whole thing, but people shared duties, shared characters, characters that were held in common with the group. And you might play George the Grog one day and I'll play George the Grog next session. And we all then identify with those stories, with all the stories that George the Grog goes through. And we remember the time that we played George the Grog, and George's mythology is rich and deep and grows, even though he's not my specific character and I didn't drive every bit of his motivation. So those were concepts that were introduced to me like really early when I was really first learning about games other than Dungeons and Dragons. And I just accepted it as an option that, when I tried to introduce it to other people outside of my group. They acted as if I was speaking crazy talk from another planet. What do you mean, share the game mastering? I am the game master. That makes me important. That's my role. They really identify with things the way they were, with the way they learned it. So I think that every time we step forward and shake that up in some way, that these people who have just really identified their personalities and their identity as human beings with things being a particular way just get just thrown off their axis and freak out.
Yeah, freak out in the weirdest possible way, really, which is, I don't know, it feels very bizarre to me, but.
Hey, people invest a lot of ego in their role playing characters. You know, they tell stories of the time that we did this, and I had the clever plan, and then I rolled the natural 20, and I did the thing, and I don't know. It's like people who played football and they made the touchdown pass, and you hear their story for years and years afterwards because they never found any other thing to identify as their shining moment.
What I find interesting is that you ask those people and they all tend to be very proud about, you know, how social role-playing games are and how good they are for developing empathy and social skills and all those things. But as soon as a project comes out or a way of playing comes out that puts those things to the test, you know, that let's find out actually how empathic you really are. Let's find out actually how socially adept you actually are. Minds explode. So there is a dissonance between what role-playing games actually are and what people say they are.
I think, you know, it's a conflict between fear and curiosity. When you're presented with something new, does it make you feel anxious or, you know, afraid, or does it make you feel curious and interested? And I'm one of those people who's curious, I think, by nature. Maybe nosy, maybe snoopy even. but
you know, that's what leads to discovery. So I just don't see what's wrong with that. So, hey, but if people want to complain, well, so be it. So, going through Green Ronin, you've had some ups and downs in terms of the kind of games that you have decided to bring out, because you've gone from having some huge licenses. You know, the Dragon Age was huge at the time. The Expanse is huge right now. The game on the words of Jemisin is just amazing thing that I'm so looking forward to. But you also have bet for some, I mean, the Game of Thrones as well, of course.
Sure.
Song of Ice and Fire. But you've also bet for games that started really small and yet they've gone up and up and up. Icons, Blue Rose is a game that people forgot for a while, and now here it is. You know, how do you choose what kind of thing you want to publish?
Oh, so if we go all the way back to the D20 days, it was we picked stuff that we were most interested in personally. So we had a whole range of releases called Mythic Vistas that were different historical time periods. And we did one that was like biblical monsters and one that was like ancient Rome or something, because people that wanted to work on it were excited about it. Mm-hmm. And again, I think it wasn't necessarily very strategic. We just were presented with something that was like, this looks really cool. Well, yeah, I want to be involved in something really cool. Let's do that.
I wonder, do you think, and this is a very loaded question, admittedly, but do you think if instead of going through these controversies, no, instead of going for the projects of let's just have women, no, you have just gone for whatever and just had a bunch of white straight cis dudes writing for you all the time and have zero controversies any time at all. Do you think your company would be as big as it is now? Would it be bigger? Would you have better games? Would you have the same games? How do you think it would have panned out?
I think it's definitely, once again, living our values, you know, that has definitely made us a stronger company and a genuine, right? A genuine company. So when people come, they know what they're getting from us. I think there was no chance that we were going to walk a line where there would never be controversy.
Okay.
Now we're doing this Book of Fiends, yes. Right? So we're doing a Book of Fiends. It was a third edition book. We're bringing it up to fifth edition compatibility and expanding it. But we also have to take into account that when it came out in 2003 or whenever we actually did it, that times were different. Mm-hmm. So what people are looking for in a book about evil monsters to fight is different than it was then. And we have to be more careful about how we're presenting potentially harmful ideas. Mm-hmm. So those weren't things that we considered 20 years ago when we started the company. I mean, not to the extent that we do now. Certainly, we've been educated and we've learned things about how portrayals of certain stereotypes are harmful and so on. So, we try to be conscious and address those things. And I think that it makes us a stronger company when people know that we approach our gaming in good faith in that way. And that if we mess it up, that we'll try to make it right.
Yes. No, and you do have a history of actually making things right when something has gone awry. So it's not as if, you haven't raised your hands at some points in the past and say, oh, yeah, this bleeding blue rose here, we need to change. So let's make this thing better. But yet you do take risks you take risks measuredly. Because yes, going for the Book of Fiends, that's a risky thing. Going through anything so evil, so thing, that could be edgelordy, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I really like beating up evil, and there are only so many Nazi faces we can pretend to punch. Sometimes I want to punch other evil,
Okay. I'm kind of disappointed.
Oh.
I'm kind of disappointed. I was hoping that you were going to tell me, because I wanted to work with Rob Schwalb again because he's amazing.
Oh, well, that's always. I was so heartbroken when I wasn't really. I was very happy for him when he was offered his Wizards work and they had him on exclusive, which meant he couldn't work with us anymore for a period of time. Just before the lockdowns happened here, I was attending a public library show in Nashville, which is only a short drive away from where Rob lives. Okay. So for the first time in a few years, I was able to take a day, an extra day. I stayed on for the weekend and drove out and had an evening where Rob and I just hung out and talked about games and game design and books that we enjoyed and a little bit of politics, a little bit of certain personalities in the game industry and that kind of gossip. But it was absolutely fabulous to see him. And I'm so glad that's one of the last things we did before the gates on travel crashed down.
Yes, oh God, yes. But okay, let's talk about this project, because I am interested on the project at several levels. Firstly, okay, you're telling me that going back to the Book of Fiends, because you like to punch evil that doesn't look just like Nazis, but there must be a business decision behind that. Why go for the book?
We had already done a translation, a conversion of our Book of the Righteous. and they kind of go in a pair, like okay. conceptually. We had done this book, this pantheon book with gods and different types of paladins and worshipers and fighters for good and light and righteousness. And having the Book of Fiends was the counterpoint to that. What are all of these amazing new types of paladins and light worshipers fighting against? Well, they're fighting against this. And when we did it in third edition, it was those were two of our most popular, most well-reviewed, most fondly remembered books. So it was a strategic decision to bring that forward to the new edition as some of our most popular material that could see life again.
How have you gone about doing the design of the creatures to make sure that, as you were mentioning, that it didn't fall into the traps that a book from 20 years ago might have fallen today?
Well, you know, Rob has been working for quite a while with his Demon Lord game, mm-hmm. doing like walking that line of bringing something foul and evil and disgusting to life without causing too much terrible offense. Mm-hmm. And all we had to do is get him started, backed up about two steps from Demon Lord, I think.
Okay.
and then, you know, review it inside the company to be like, okay, you know, like, not that Rob did this, but a pitfall could be something like the demons of lust, have them be all okay. rapey and we're aware of it going in, so we're looking for that. Obviously we only know what we know. We don't know what we don't know. So I guess it's still possible that we could mess it up, but I think we have shown the material around to the right kinds of people to read it with a sensitivity to keep us from falling in too many horrible pit traps.
In terms of the development of the book, did you have to follow any kind of a pattern or a development process that's different from any, I'm going to use the word safer, book?
So I'm not exactly the person to comment on that because I am operations.
Oh, okay.
And Premis and Schwab works together on this, crafting it.
You let them alone?
Indeed.
Okay.
My favorite beardy man, yes.
That is going to make the project even more interesting because I can only imagine what those two can get up to when they get together.
Right?
That's going to be amazing. Okay. You have gone for Game on Tabletop this time.
Yes.
Instead of going for Kickstarter, there is a very obvious question that's coming. Why?
Yes. So for a couple of years, we've actually been talking to the lovely folks at Game on Tabletop about launching a project like this with them, specifically because we have some dissatisfactions with like the tools and the way Kickstarter is structured. They've been slow, I think, to respond to make any improvements to their platform because for so long they were just making money hand over fist, regardless of how bad the tools might be.
Yes.
It was terribly difficult just to get them to allow us to refund money to a disgruntled backer or somebody who joined just to be a naysayer. In one of our projects, we had a guy pony up the $200 so that he could troll us with his made up horrible offensive character insertion. And I turned around and gave him his money back and told him to go away. And under old Kickstarter, if I had done that, he would have still been able to hang out in the comments forever and talk about us badly and stir up trouble. And just that concession to removing a bad element by giving them their money back and removing their access to the project was incredibly slow in coming. Mm. So when the Black Book Editions folks were talking with us about something aimed specifically at tabletop gaming with built-in pledge manager tools and stuff. We were really excited because most backers don't see a lot of the behind-the-scenes framework that is holding up these campaigns, but it's the difference between having, like, you know, a really nice luxury car and modest, gas efficient, but kind of uncomfortable, no frills, utilitarian vehicle. And yeah.
So what does the game have to offer from the point of view of platform? Because I know, I mean, I would like to talk in a minute as well about what the marketing stuff around it is all about. But in terms of as a platform for people who may be thinking about starting a project, what do you think are the best things that Game on Tabletop has to offer compared to Kickstarter?
I really appreciate the difference in being how you're able to set up your campaign to begin with, being able to just, I guess it's kind of the same as if you're putting together a website and you prefer a certain software. Some people like a WordPress site and some people, you know, hate WordPress for reasons. They've looked at the kinds of things that people who are going to support a tabletop game are interested in seeing: screenshots, embedded art, the ability to link things in certain ways. And I just found that the interface for Game on Tabletop was more intuitive and more flexible. It's sounds kind of personal preferency, and I don't want to get into like a Mac versus PC kind of argument, especially because we have done a lot of projects on Kickstarter. We've done 10 projects on Kickstarter over the years, and it has served us well in many ways. They've become the Kleenex of when people say they're we had to be careful with our own language, because not all crowdfunding is Kickstarter, but people use it generically.
Yes.
They're running a Kickstarter, right? And it's not actually, it's a different crowdfunding. So I expect that we will at some points go back to Kickstarter because of the embedded customer base that we have there after running 10 campaigns with people who use and are already engaged in that platform. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's the same sort of dynamic as when people choose a convention, when a game company says, well, Origins is my favorite convention, or PAX is my favorite convention, because when we go to PAX, we really see the people that are interested in our game, and that's where we really connect. It's not universal for everyone. It's not the same experience for everyone. Gen Con has always been our go-to, and sometimes, you know, Gen Con has been a terrible, expensive experiment for people, but it was our bread and butter show for 20 years, where other companies really focused on organized play and tournament structures, and so they really loved Origins for that, because Origins attendees were really of that mindset, and and as we don't do organized play, we weren't hitting the same success at Origins as those companies that were plugged in that way. I think one of the benefits of Game on Tabletop is that it is only for tabletop games. So I'm not going to Kickstarter and getting faced with a page of every other thing I've ever backed. You know, the guy who was making novelty jams, and the you know, reporter whose podcast I backed when she was fired from her newspaper, and, you know, the guy who makes these really elaborate wood carvings and stuff. I've backed all sorts of things on Kickstarter that have nothing to do with tabletop games, but I would love for there to be like the tabletop game place that you went when you wanted to know about a new game project that you were right there with it. And I think it's again personal preference, but But it hits my sweet spot for what I'm interested in.
Okay, well, that's indeed very fair enough. One of the criticisms that I have heard from people is that, unlike a project in Kickstarter, you were gathering the funds right away. People are being charged immediately. They do the backing rather than waiting until the end of the campaign when all the money is collected at the same time. Is that something that you decided to do, or is that how Game on Tabletop works?
So Game on Tabletop is set up with that as the default. Basically, we just decided to try the default. We do have an option of it in a future project deciding to collect the funds in a different way. We were just curious to see if it would work.
Okay. Do you think it's worked the same way as if it would have in a normal, you know, project in Kickstarter, that you're getting the same traction and the same number of people?
I think it got off to a little bit slower start than Kickstarter launch, because we had to do a little bit of work for just exactly the question that you were asking. Where is this and why are you over there? Like, it's an extra step. I think that after this campaign has every mark of being successful. We're funded, we're moving towards our level ups and everything. So I think that on the back of that, future projects would be easier going forward, but there definitely was some selling of the platform in addition to, you know, but you know, it's the same thing. It was the same thing with my last Kickstarter. I went with a different pledge manager.
Okay.
Because once you're on Kickstarter, then you have to do all your pledge management, and then you've got your backer kit, right? Everybody's using backer kit. Maybe I don't remember if backer kit was first out the gate or has just been like the crowd leader or whatever. But the assumption was that you would do Kickstarter and then it goes to backer kit. And so when I chose to go with a different pledge manager and fulfillment process for the expanse, when we did the expanse, we had the same sort of resistance. People were like, wait a minute, I've got to sign up for a new thing.
Yes.
And I don't blame them. Like, I understand. You get the thing that you like. Just it's the curiosity versus fear impulse, right? Again, I'm curious to see if it's going to work better. And so I'm willing to be like, let's see if it works. And then people are faced with it, and I get the resistance from people who are afraid that the experience is going to be worse, or that it's going to be confusing, or that it's going to not be as reliable as the thing they already know. You're getting a view of how deep this you know impulse goes with me, I guess.
No, but I think it makes sense, because in many ways, I have done exactly the same thing in the past. When I was a publisher in Spain, I did try, you know, I was the first person to actually have a campaign trying to go POD.
Yeah.
And I found massive resistance, and the whole thing went off because no one had done POD before. Now there's plenty of people doing it because they have got used to it. So I kind of paid the price. I was the first person to do a pre-sale campaign using a crowdfunding platform. You know, it wasn't, I'm not trying to fund this because it's already been translated and laid out and everything. I'm just trying to figure out how many books I need to print.
Right.
So I'm pre-selling. And people was a bit, well, why are you doing this? You know, why don't you just print them? So I can understand the curiosity thing. Do you do anything that you think, well, okay, this is my curiosity, let's see how I actually inspire people to feel this curious with me, because this is working okay, but it could have just backfired big time.
It could have, yeah. You know, I'm a little impulsive, I guess. I'm just like, you know, like at a certain point, we got to stop talking about it and take an action. We can always take a different action if it doesn't work out. But if we're just going to stand around debating about what to do, we'll never get down the road.
And I can imagine an awful lot of companies now looking at you thinking, let's see how it works for them. And maybe then we can try ourselves.
So one of my very early projects that I was put in charge of putting together early in my career was a card game called The Challenge. It's a cute little fighting card game with little characters. You have a little mob of characters and you're just literally fighting like back and forth with the cards. But we were a tiny publisher. I had no idea how to print cards. And so I approached card manufacturers that were doing playing cards and tried to get them interested in the project and was told that, you know, it was impossible. It was really impossible to do. And then I approached distribution and retail and again was scolded that what I was talking about, a deck of cards, would be a terrible idea in a game store. Terrible idea. Couldn't possibly be done. It's just... they wouldn't even carry it unless it was in an 8.5 by 11 box. So I put together this project in a way that I didn't really want to, but I wanted to see the game out. So it was perforated sheets. So you detached the cards. So they all had those little rough edges. And we published them in sheets and we published them in a box that was, you know, only this thick, but it was in the box that the distribution asked for. And it didn't do great because it wasn't the right format for this game. But I was told that any other thing was impossible. Within 2 years, Magic the Gathering was in every store everywhere. And you know what? Turned out it was plenty possible. You just have to have the right motivation.
Yes.
And you need to be able to show that there's money to be made and or, you know, have enough of enough money that you're willing to throw away. I did not have tens of thousands of dollars that I could just be like, well, let's see if it works. I'm curious with that kind of money. Right. So there's that tension. But it also taught me that if you're sufficiently motivated to make a thing happen, it can happen. You just have to find the right way around it. And sometimes people are going to take some convincing to see the world a little differently and to accept that no, not every product in a game store needs to be in a 8.5 by 11 box.
Fair enough indeed. So okay, this project has funded now, and I think it's starting. Actually, it's funny because I think it's starting to gather momentum.
Yes.
Once it has reached its funding plus, I mean, I think people were a little bit they're gonna charge me the money now. What happens if it doesn't get? Now that they know it's got where it should be, it's actually going faster. So this is gonna happen. Rob is gonna scare the shit out of us, which is great. And now what? What's happening now in Green Ronin Labs?
So, you know, it's been a little challenging because we've had, you know, with the lockdown, we had lost access to our warehouse. The warehouse was locked down. So we couldn't actually access any of our printed product for the last couple of months. So we couldn't even do mail order direct to customers who wanted to buy books from us. We've been surviving on nothing but PDF sales for the last... that's a little anxiety provoking. Yes, sir. I'm happy that the warehouse is coming back online. It came, officially started processing orders again last week. So that's going to be helpful for us. I don't know what the state of retail shops is, though, you know, because they've been in the same boat trying to do things like curbside delivery or mail order for themselves as well, but they've been caught in the same sorts of situation that we were in. So we did a massive push inside the company to pivot towards what we can be doing online. We've started doing some of the projects that we had planned to be printing right now. I have two books at printers that were in the process of being printed that are now sitting at the printer and have been on hold for 2 months. We had one that was being delivered the day that the warehouse shut down. So the trucks couldn't get there to even drop it off. We had to find other storage for that. Now we have to arrange to get that product to the correct warehouse, secondary So with all of those challenges still kind of out there, and they haven't been worked out yet as far as print products go, we've been doing things like dividing up our print products into discrete pieces that we could offer as PDFs, or doing a PDF release of something that's ready that we don't know when it'll be going to print. We're just going to have a PDF release of it. Malcolm Shepherd is our... he's a developer at large. Because he came in and his first project was to do a second edition of our orc game, our beer and pretzels orc fighting role-playing game. And then he took on the development of Modern Age, and he's been doing that. But he also pitches in on a lot of other things. So the at-large developing he does. And he was inspired to take the existing Chronicle system, which is what Rob originally developed to be the engine that ran the Game of Thrones game. Now that our license is concluded, we still have that engine, which is really cool, interesting, fun engine. And Malcolm was like, I joke about it. It's like he went into the garage and came out having hand-built a motorcycle out of spare parts. So we're like, hey, where did you get all of that stuff? And he was like, it was in the garage. I just put it together. So he's done some really awesome, interesting work to convert the Chronicle system into a game that we are going to be releasing sometime this summer. Just kind of, surprise, here's a game. called Sword Chronicle. So
that sounds exciting.
See, it's we're letting people who are good at doing things just, you know, take the path that their motivation inspires them to take, and we're taking some chances. Like, I don't know if people are interested in a new game from us, you know, without having to prep them first. It's just like, surprise, here's a new game. But at the same time, I love the idea that my developer was like, no, there's all these Legos that right on my desk that I'm just going to put together here because I can see it. And now we have a game and it's awesome and cool. And it came out of nowhere and it doesn't have to be worried about. It's exciting. It's an exciting time.
Well, I think it's fantastic that you actually keep that excitement going in the company. That is not what game can we do that's going to follow our code of ethics, but it's going to, you know, be successful as a business. Yeah. You're taking a massive chance with this.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Welcome to Green Ronin.
Yeah. That's how we live. Masterless men and all of that.
I love the sound of that. Okay, to wrap it up, because I feel that I could be here for many, many hours. Yes, just talking to
you. Yes, this is a delight. We should do it again.
Thank you. Oh, we will. I promise you that. and this is possibly going to be a difficult question to answer, but there are an awful lot of companies out there who are just as invested in being as good as they possibly can, but they are actually quite, I don't want to be vocal about this. What would you say to those companies about what the true advantage, or what does it contribute to be vocal about your code of ethics and what you want to achieve within your industry and your games?
I have so much sympathy for people who don't want to get into it, who don't want to attract the unpleasant attentions. There are definitely people who have very good reasons to not want that kind of attention. I feel like I'm in a privileged position to be able to do it. You know, I'm not afraid to fire a customer because he's an asshole. I don't need his $40 that badly. But I can see where it's not necessarily the path that everyone has the fortitude for. I think it's very similar to Crystal Fraser is our Mutants and Masterminds line developer. And she is a very vocal, out trans woman. And she attracts a lot of unpleasant attention because of that. Every now and then there'll be a flare up on one of the Chan sites or whatever, and there'll be some targeted harassment. She's had people try to get her fired from her jobs and silly things like that. Of course, when she's working with someone like us, we'll just be like, oh, I'm sorry, was that project too gay for you? I think we're going to double down on the gay now. You know, stuff it, Tarnowski.
Yes.
So, you know, but it's definitely a choice, right? It's a choice. I think it's incredibly admirable for her to be willing to be out there taking questions, being educating people she does not need to be spending the time to educate, being forward and inspirational to other people who are not in her position, who are not out for reasons of personal safety or whatever. But I've seen also that it comes with a cost. Mm. So I don't take lightly that that when people are vocal or not, that that's a very personal choice. I find that it is inspiring to me, and I think that the rest of the company feels this way too, to be authentic and genuine and hopefully provide inspiration and security for people who are looking, who want to be out or who want to be forward thinking and promoting new ideas and attitudes, but they we need to be together on it, right? So
yeah.
So I've just kicked something over.
That's right. Okay, right. So to finish. Okay.
Yes. To sum up.
Yes. I have three questions to ask, which are rather hard. But question number one: what is the best advice that no one has ever given you?
Oh yeah, that's you know, I've gotten some really good advice in the past that I've not listened to, but the best advice nobody's ever given me that I maybe wish they would have. I think it would be to nobody's ever told me to trust my gut more.
Okay. That's a very good one. Okay. Second question. What is the best mistake that you would like to make again?
I would love to make the mistake of quitting my job, moving to the other side of the country to join a startup I had no business in.
Okay.
that was my time at Early White Wolf. I had no business being there. None of us had any business being there when we were children, but it was a terrible mistake and learning experience, except that it was so good for me. And I learned so much that put me on the right path. So good. In middle age, I've been considering making some similar middle-aged mistakes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, good. Well, that's a good one. Okay, last question.
Okay.
Imagine that you have a time machine. Mm. And you go back in time and you meet your 10-year-old self. And you say to your 10-year-old self, do not do this. What is this?
Oh, you know, I have had this. I have gone through this scenario in my life, and I've considered the time machine.
Okay, but you haven't gone back in time.
I have not. Well, okay. I'm not supposed to tell.
Wow, that was quite an exclusive. That is.
But I have always failed to like pinpoint a thing, because everything I've done has led me to something else that I was so glad to have experienced, even if the thing that led me there was a bad idea or a bad thing. I'm going to say, don't hug that dog that bit you in the face. Like, definitely don't hug that dog.
Okay, well, it's a good one. You know, it saves you from being bitten in the face. So, yes, I'll take
it. I think I could. I think my life would still be on its correct trajectory if I hadn't been bitten in the face by that dog. I had like 45 stitches or something as a kid because it was a bad one.
That is a bad one.
It was.
Gosh.
So see, I am being very helpful to my 10-year-old self.
Yes. Gosh, actually, I wish we could tell that 10-year-old self that. Nicole, thank you. So.
Oh, it's been a delight. It's been a delight. Thank you for having me on.
Anytime, absolutely anytime. I really hope that we will be doing this sometime very, very soon.
Sounds wonderful.
And that, unfortunately, that's it. And believe you me, because I did it, I could have spent hours talking to Nicole. And yes, we talked off camera an awful lot, and it was just as wonderful. So, please, seriously, please do take a look at the Book of Ians, please. I know what an awful lot of people feel regarding using a different crowdfunding platform, you know, registering, payment methods, so on and so forth. But both Game on Tabletop and Green Ronin certainly deserve the support. And I absolutely adore Rob Schwalb. He's somebody that I am incredibly fond of. So please, please, please take a look, because this project is going to be amazing. Game on Tabletop, they do deserve an awful lot of support. They're a dedicated platform, they're gamers just like us, they're geeks just like us, and they're trying to do something wonderful just for us. So please, specifically, especially at this time when things are getting so hard for so many people, give them a hand, show your support. If you cannot or don't want to back the project because it's not your cup of tea, share it. Tell everyone about it. Just talk about it in whatever forums you use, in your Discord channel, in your own YouTube channel, wherever it is. Talking helps an awful lot. So please, please, please do lend a hand. Anyway, thank you very much indeed for listening and or watching. And, I will be coming back very, very soon with more reviews, more interviews just for you. But until the next time, please stay safe, and I will talk to you very, very soon. Take care.